Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for April 5th, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gazier. Ag and Environment, Government and Politics. Iowa Senate votes to limit lawsuits over Roundup, other farm and lawn chemicals. By Jared Strong, April 2nd, 2024. A bill that would partially shield the maker of a widely used agricultural and lawn herbicide from lawsuits over its health effects was adopted by the Iowa Senate on Tuesday. Senate File 2412 would protect Bayer against claims it failed to warn people about the potential health effects of Roundup so long as this product is labeled as required by federal regulations. The legislation would apply to all domestic producers of herbicides and pesticides, but eliminating the failure to warn claims is part of Bayer's public strategy to, quote, manage and mitigate the risks of Roundup litigation, according to its website. The company hopes the U.S. Supreme Court decides that the claims are overruled by federal law, which the company predicts, quote, could largely end the Roundup litigation, end quote. But a federal appeals court rejected that argument in February. Bayer says about 167,000 lawsuits have been filed by people who claim their exposure to Roundup caused ailments such as cancer, often non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. The herbicide has been used to kill weeds for about four decades. The litigation has cost the company billions of dollars. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has said Roundup's primary ingredient, glyphosate, is not likely to cause cancer in humans and that it poses no health risks, quote, when used in accordance with this current label, end quote. But in 2015, the International Agency for Research on Cancer determined glyphosate is, quote, probably carcinogenic to humans, end quote. That decision, quote, opened up a floodgate and what I'm going to call a loophole of legal practice in which these lawsuits specifically detailed on the failure to warn, said Jeff Edler, a Republican from State Center who managed the bill. Edler and other Republicans argue that allegations about Roundup's negative health effects are too flimsy to warrant the mountain of litigation that they say has driven its cost higher for crop farmers and has the potential to end its production and use. Senator Amy Sinclair, Republican Allerton, said without Roundup, the state's farmers, quote, will have to return to pre-modern methods, end quote, of crop production. Several Democrats who spoke against the bill during a Senate debate on Tuesday portrayed it as a capitulation to corporations over the needs of residents and downplayed the lawsuit's potential effects on agriculture. Quote, our people in this state need to retain the ability to go to court when they have been injured, when they have fallen to disease, when their family members have died, said Senator Herman Kornbach, Democrat Ames. A failure to warn claim is a common feature of pesticide lawsuits, but there are other grounds for the litigation. Lawsuits in Iowa in recent years concerning Roundup have also claimed defective design, negligence, breach of warranty, unfair and deceptive trade practices, and fraud, according to court records. The bill passed with a 30-19 vote. All Senate Democrats voted against it, and they were joined by four Republicans, Senators Calvin Allons of Salix, Mark Lofgren of Muscatine, Sandy Salmon of Janesville, and Jeff Taylor of Sioux Center. The bill moves to the House, where its fate is unclear. A House committee had planned to discuss a similar bill Tuesday, but didn't. To help avoid future lawsuits, Bayer has eliminated glyphosate from its lawn and garden herbicides, which were the source of, quote, the vast majority of claims, end quote, the company says. It is also developing an alternative to glyphosate. Ag and Environment, Government and Politics, Capital Clicks. Ethanol, quote, transition, end quote, bill gets support in both chambers. By Jared Strong, April 2nd, 2024. An Iowa House committee unanimously approved a bill Tuesday that would delay requirements for gas stations to install fuel dispensers that can handle fuel blends with higher amounts of ethanol. House Study Bill 742 would modify a 2022 law that says new gas stations and those that are updated must use dispensers that are compatible with E85, a blend that is 85% ethanol and 15% gasoline. Instead, new dispensers must be compatible with at least E15 until next year, then E40 until 2023, then E85 thereafter under the modification. The law is meant to ensure easier transitions to higher ethanol blends in future years. But some gas station owners have worried about their ability to obtain the dispensers. A similar bill in the Senate was approved by a committee last month. Quote, "It's really important for us to support our farmers, our agricultural industry, and therefore support this good piece of legislation," said Representative Sammy Sheets, Democrat, Cedar Rapids. More than half the corn produced in Iowa is used to make ethanol, and Iowa is the top ethanol-producing state. Government and politics. Bill restricting consumable hemp products heads to governor's desk. Senators also vote to add state medical cannabis licenses. By Robin Opsahl, April 2, 2024. The Iowa Senate sent Governor Kim Reynolds a bill Tuesday that tightens Iowa's laws and regulations on consumable hemp products as the products become more widely available. Senators also passed a bill doubling the maximum number of licenses available for medical cannabis dispensaries. House File 2605 passed on a 31-18 vote, would put a limit of 4 milligrams of tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, per serving in consumable hemp products, as well as a 10-milligram limit per container, in addition to requiring warning labels on such products. The bill would also impose an age limit of 21, as well as new restrictions and penalties related to the possession, sale, and manufacturing of hemp products. Senator Dan Dawson, Republican Council Bluffs, the bill's floor manager, said updating the Iowa Hemp Act is necessary not only to regulate the growing industry, but also to ensure that people are not misusing hemp products as a substitute for the state's medical cannabidiol program. Quote, "The medical cannabidiol program actually puts an individual with a doctor to get these products, and that's the biggest distinction," Dawson said. "The Iowa hemp program has none of those barriers there, so if we want to protect Iowans with these products, ellipses, there has to be some type of guardrails on here to make sure that the medical cannabidiol program is the program that we can direct Iowans to when they have one of these diagnosed conditions." Although Democratic senators voted against the bill, none spoke in opposition to the legislation during floor debate. During House debate last month, Representative John Forbes, Democrat Urbandale, said he was concerned about, quote, "unintended consequences," end quote, of the bill's limitations on hemp products for people who use them for medical purposes outside of the medical cannabidiol program, like those who use products containing CBD or THC while recovering from opioid addictions. Quote, "I think we're not hitting the nail on the head here. When it comes to being able to help Iowans that are seeking out this as an alternative to maybe taking other prescription medications and increasing quality of life, helping them," Forbes said. There were not only concerns about potential medical misuse of hemp products, but also about the safety or recreational use of inebriating products derived from hemp. Dawson said that the bill is, quote, "desperately needed regulation on this industry to not only protect industry, but also to protect the consumers who might indulge in these products." Senator Tom Shipley, Republican Nottoway, said that when he worked on the original Iowa Hemp Act, passed in 2019, he knew there were, quote, "some nefarious motives behind this," end quote, with businesses hoping to sell products not accounted for by the law. Quote, "We found out some people could find an angle to get around things and do things that are not good for Iowans," Shipley said. "And I just want to stand up in support of Senator Dawson's bill to try and close some of these loopholes that even I could figure out were coming." In addition to the new restrictions on hemp products, lawmakers are also considering a bill that would add an excise tax on consumable hemp products. Senate Study Bill 3186, passed by the Senate Ways and Means Committee, would set a 2.5%, quote, "sin tax," end quote, on the sales price of consumable hemp products. Dawson said in the March committee meeting that the measure would address current tax disparities between alcohol and hemp product retailers. Education, government, and politics. Bill aimed at improving Iowa student literacy passes House. By Robin Opsahl, April 2, 2024. The Iowa House approved a bill aimed at improving literacy rates for Iowa students, allowing parents to have their child repeat a grade if they're not proficient in reading, and adding new educational requirements for teachers. House File 2618 passed on a 92-3 vote Tuesday. The bill would require schools to notify parents or guardians of students in kindergarten through sixth grade who are not reading at grade level proficiency, and inform them of their ability to request that their child repeat a grade. Students who are not meeting literacy benchmarks will be given a personalized plan to assist them until they are able to read at grade level. Representative Sharon Steckman, Democrat Mason City, said many of the measures required by the bill are efforts teachers already take to improve literacy outcomes with students. Quote, "Teachers watch out for kids that are not reading at grade level already," Steckman said. "Teachers talk to parents already. Teachers put forth in parenthetical individualized education program and parenthetical or some sort of a plan for that student to get on grade level already. So much of this we're already doing," end quote. She also praised the bill for being, quote, "toned down," end quote, from Governor Kim Reynolds' original proposal. When Reynolds brought up legislation at the beginning of session as a way to improve literacy rates in Iowa schools, she proposed requiring Iowa teacher licensure candidates in early childhood, elementary, K-12 reading and literacy preparation programs, as well as those in special education, to pass the Foundations of Reading assessment to graduate. The passing requirement for teacher licensure was removed in a House amendment, but education program students would still be required to take the assessment, with results reported to the Iowa Department of Education. The House bill also omits some of the prescriptions on reading instruction and literacy strategies present in the Senate's version related to the teaching of phonics, teaching the sounds of letters to learn how to read, and banning certain literacy teaching strategies associated with rote memorization or contextual clues to identify a written word. These measures were discussed in the context of the, quote, "science of reading," end quote, teaching methods that put a larger emphasis on phonics to improve young students' reading and language abilities. Other states, including Mississippi, have seen improvements in national reading scores after adopting the approach. Reynolds said in January that while Iowa did not see the drops in reading scores in recent years that other states have, quote, "holding steady isn't good enough," end quote, for Iowa students. The results from the 2022-2023 Iowa statewide assessment of student progress showed that 34% of Iowa third graders were not yet proficient in English language art skills. Studies have found that students not proficient at reading in third grade face greater difficulties with academics and in their personal life as they age. Representative Tom Moore, Republican Griswold, thanked Reynolds' office for working with lawmakers to come up with a, quote, "good compromise," end quote, on how to approach improving reading education for Iowa students. Moore agreed with Steckman on the bill's provisions being strategies many Iowa teachers already employ, but said that it was important to ensure all students get more literacy support as needed. Quote, "Obviously, we wouldn't be in the middle of the pack nationally reading-wise if all of our teachers were doing some of these things," Moore said. The legislation heads to the Senate for further consideration. Ag and Environment, Capital Clicks. Ash borer found in all Iowa counties but one. By Jared Strong, April 1st, 2024. Emmett County, in far northern Iowa, is the lone remaining county in the state with no confirmed presence of a beetle that kills ash trees, according to the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. On Monday, the department said the emerald ash borer was discovered in Palo Alto County for the first time in a tree in a public area near Emmitsburg. The beetle was first found in far northeast Iowa in 2010 and has since spread to all parts of the state. The beetle's larvae eat the living inner bark of ash trees and typically kill them within 2 to 4 years. The beetle spread has led some cities to proactively remove ash trees in anticipation of their demise or to attempt insecticide treatments to prevent it. State conservation officials have estimated there were about 55 million ash trees in Iowa before the beetle's arrival. The adult beetles are metallic green and about a half inch long. Ash trees that are infested often have fewer leaves, sprouts with leaves coming from lower parts of the trunk or main branches, and holes where the beetles emerge that are shaped like the letter D and are about 1/8 of an inch wide. Those who see evidence of the emerald ash borer in Emmett County can call the state entomologist's office at 515-725-1470. Healthcare, working and economy. Citing claims of meth use, state revokes child care center's license. By Clark Kaufman, April 2nd, 2024. A central Iowa child care provider is challenging a license revocation that's based on alleged methamphetamine use in her home. Amanda Lindsay of Des Moines is taking the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services to court in an effort to have a judge overturn the department's decision revoking her child care provider's license. The case originated with a September 2022 complaint to DHHS alleging that Lindsay, who operates Amanda's child care out of her home on Don Lee Court in Des Moines, was using methamphetamine while caring for children, and that she was allowing others to use and sell meth out of the daycare house while children were present. State records indicate that on the same day DHHS received the complaint, it sent investigators to Lindsay's home. Initially, the inspectors later alleged, Lindsay failed to come to the door, but did so after a phone call was made and someone on the premises was alerted to their presence. At the time, Lindsay was caring for a 7-month-old child. Inspectors alleged that during their visit, Lindsay refused to give them access to a safe where the complainant had alleged drugs were being stored. According to the inspectors, Lindsay said she had lost the key and forgotten the combination. According to the inspectors, Lindsay allegedly told them her cousin, while not authorized to be in the house, had, quote, moved herself, end quote, in, and then refused to leave, although Lindsay would later deny telling investigators that. The inspectors alleged the cousin's probation officer reported that Lindsay had contacted her for assistance in getting the cousin out of the house, and said the cousin had claimed she and Lindsay had used meth in the house. The inspectors contacted the cousin, who allegedly told them Lindsay was sometimes absent from the house, leaving her with younger children who were being provided daycare services. Within days of the investigation being launched, DHHS notified Lindsay her license, technically referred to as child care registration, was being revoked effective October 4, 2022. That decision was appealed, and last July, while still providing child care, Lindsay participated in a hearing that involved not only her license revocation, but 5 separate child abuse assessments related to the allegations of meth in the house. In a proposed decision upholding DHHS's efforts to revoke Lindsay's license, Administrative Law Judge Toby Gordon ruled last August that there was significant evidence to indicate the cousin was in the house as an unauthorized household member or caregiver, which was in violation of state regulations. Gordon found that Lindsay admitted that her cousin was in her home over a period of months in the winter and spring of 2022. He noted that the parents of one child also reported seeing the cousin in the house from time to time. Gordon concluded Lindsay had allowed an unauthorized person to reside in the house and provide unauthorized, unsupervised care for a child. In his ruling, Gordon stated that in light of those findings, it wasn't necessary for him to address DHHS's parallel child abuse findings that meth had been present in the house, creating a risk for any children there. He also noted that in 2020, Lindsay's self-described, quote, best friend, end quote, was homeless and had moved into her house without permission until DHHS intervened. In light of that past situation, Gordon ruled, Lindsay was, quote, undoubtedly aware that a violation could put her daycare registration at risk, end quote. Gordon's proposed decision in the case was forwarded to DHHS Director Kelly Garcia. 7 months later, on March 8th, Garcia adopted the findings and issued a final order revoking Lindsay's license. That, in turn, led to Lindsay's court petition last week seeking judicial review of Garcia's decision. The state has not yet filed a response to the petition. Lindsay said Tuesday in an interview she doesn't understand why DHHS is, quote, taking the word of a known drug user, end quote, and revoking her license. Quote, I can't believe it got to this point, she said, adding that she has been providing daycare for families for 22 years. Because she's no longer a state-registered child care provider, she can no longer accept children whose care is funded through government child care assistance programs. In addition, she said, the number of private pay children she can care for is now capped at 6. Previously, she said, she cared for 8 to 12 children at a time. Quote, and so this has cut my income in half. State records indicate that prior to the case involving Lindsay's cousin, DHHS's annual inspections of Amanda's child care resulted in violations primarily related to safety provisions, such as the need for additional smoke detectors. On some occasions, Lindsay was reported to have taken an unusually long time to answer the door when state investigators arrived at the house. Education, government, and politics. Capital clicks. Iowa Senate passes bills for Iowa college aid reporting requirements, student outcome data, by Brooklyn Dracy, April 1, 2024. The Iowa Senate passed two bills relating to community colleges and the Iowa College Student Aid Commission Monday, sending one to the governor's desk and the other to the House. House File 2153 would change reporting requirements for the Iowa College Student Aid Commission, or Iowa College Aid, including striking requirements for annual reports on certain tuition grants and student loan forgiveness programs. Senator Jeff Taylor, Republican Sioux Center, said the legislation would minimize the number of reports the commission must make for the programs it runs. Quote, the Department of Education would consolidate all reporting on all active student aid programs administered by the College Student Aid Commission instead of having a different report for each program, Taylor said. It will head to the governor after unanimous passage in the Senate and House. House File 2615 would require community colleges to publish a link to the Iowa Student Outcomes website on their sites and for school districts to provide high school juniors and seniors who have expressed an interest in post-secondary education with a report from the Iowa Board of Regents detailing graduate outcomes, income and student loan debt of state university graduates, as well as information on the Iowa Student Outcomes site would be included in the report. An amendment adopted by the Senate ensured that schools are not required to provide hard copies of the Board of Regents report, just a link to it. The legislation also makes college and career transition counselors exempt from the supplementary weighting received by school districts who share operational functions with community colleges or other organizations. It will head back to the House for consideration. Ag and Environment, Government and Politics. DNR director confirmed, some Democrats say agency is hamstrung by governor. By Jared Strong, April 3, 2024. The Iowa Senate reconfirmed the director of the State Department of Natural Resources on Wednesday, despite concerns from some Democrats that she is forced to operate as a puppet of Governor Kim Reynolds. Quote, Kayla Lyon is just like many of Governor Reynolds' other appointees and department heads. She can only do so much, said Senator Claire Selce, Democrat, West Des Moines. She can only do what the boss tells her to do. A Reynolds spokesperson did not immediately respond to a request to comment for this article. Lyon, 39, of Ames, was appointed to the post by Reynolds in 2019. Her reconfirmation by the Senate this week was prompted by state law, which requires another confirmation vote for appointees after 4 years. She leads a department of about 890 full-time and 450 seasonal employees. It is charged with maintaining public areas and wildlife and the enforcement of environmental regulations on businesses, cities, drinking water utilities, and livestock operations. Lyon, quote, has taken that job to heart, said Senator Annette Sweeney, Republican Alden. Her work stretches in many ways throughout the department, ellipses, wanting to make sure that our natural resources are taken care of in our state, end quote. A recent DNR evaluation listed more than 700 water body segments of the state that are impaired, meaning they don't meet water quality standards for recreation, public water supplies, and the protection of aquatic life. A primary contributor to the problem is agriculture, which is also under the purview of the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. State parks also need about $100 million in repairs, and there's a plan to eliminate all park ranger positions, according to the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Lyon was a lobbyist for dairy farmers and farmers cooperatives before joining state government. Her reconfirmation required two-thirds support, and Lyon cleared that threshold with a 40-9 vote. All of those who voted against confirmation were Democrats, and they were just over half of the Democrats in the chamber. Quote, I think that Kayla Lyon, if she was allowed to do what a director can do, provide policy direction to this body on what the problems are and how to fix them, and the funding that needs to accompany that to solve those problems, this state would have clean water, said Senator Pam Yoakum, Democrat Dubuque, who voted against confirmation. The DNR's funding requests have been roughly static in recent years. Senator Tom Shipley, Republican Nottoway, disputed that the DNR is prevented from taking sufficient action to protect the environment, along with Democrats' claims of, quote, how bad our environment is, end quote. He said the resurgence of certain animal populations, such as bald eagles and white-tailed deer, is evidence that conditions are improving. Quote, "We have otters in the river we never used to have," Shipley said. "We have turkeys in the trees that we never used to have. We have all kinds of bobcats." Lyon did not address the Democrats' allegations, but told Iowa Capital Dispatch, quote, "It's been an honor to serve as the director of the Department of Natural Resources. I'm grateful for the opportunity to work alongside DNR staff across the state, and I'm humbled by their extensive knowledge and passion. My appreciation for this job doesn't stop at the office or in the field with staff. It extends to when I'm spending time enjoying the resources with my family." Ag and environment, government and politics, working and economy. Capital clicks. Meat labeling bill amended to restrict SNAP purchases of egg substitutes. By Robin Opsahl, April 3, 2024. The Iowa House passed a bill Wednesday that would prohibit imitation meat products from being misleadingly labeled as meat, with an amendment prohibiting people from purchasing egg substitutes through food assistance programs. Senate File 2391, approved by a 60-34 vote, establishes fines for businesses that create non-meat products and label them with terms used for butchered meat. If the labels do not also include terms like, quote, fake or, quote, vegetarian, specifying that they are not traditional meat products. The bill, largely targeting substitute meat products that are made from insects, lab-grown meat, and plants, was approved unanimously by the Senate, but was met with strong resistance during House floor debate Wednesday. Democrats' opposition to the bill was not over the labeling of products, lawmakers said, but with a House amendment adding restrictions related to eggs and egg substitutes. In addition to adding labeling requirements and establishing fines for misbranding of, quote, fabricated egg products, end quote, as eggs, the amendment also created purchasing restrictions on such products. Iowans could not use food benefits through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, or Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, WIC, to purchase egg substitutes. If egg substitutes were approved as purchasable foods through SNAP or WIC, the legislation would direct the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services to seek a waiver or exemption from having these products be eligible for purchase through the programs in Iowa. Senator Monica Kurth, Democrat Davenport, said the amended legislation would take away the rights of people on SNAP and WIC to buy foods that they are currently able to purchase through the program, many of whom, she said, use egg substitutes due to allergies or other health concerns. She said egg allergies among children are, quote, not uncommon, end quote, and that egg substitutes are often the only available means to replace them. Quote, perhaps USDA will turn down the waiver request and things will be different, but it's just bad legislation, Kurth said. The bill's floor manager, Representative Heather Hora, Republican, Washington, said the amendment came as the bill was meant to protect Iowa's livestock producers and that House lawmakers, quote, felt it would be important to protect Iowa's egg producers as well, end quote. Quote, eggs are one of nature's most perfect foods. Imitation products cannot compete with the unmatched protein and nutrients found in eggs, Hora said. Iowa leads the nation in egg production, producing more than the second and third largest states combined. This amendment will help protect Iowa's egg producers and the quality of their products, end quote. When asked by Representative Chuck Eisenhardt, Democrat Dubuque, if the amendment would make it more difficult for Iowans on food assistance to access egg substitutes, Hora simply answered, quote, yes. Representative Ako Abdul-Samad, Democrat Des Moines, said he believed proper food labeling was, quote, imperative, end quote, but he could not support a measure that would specifically restrict people in need of food assistance from purchasing products they need based on medical or dietary restrictions. Quote, let's protect our people that need help, Abdul-Samad said. Let's protect the babies that can't eat eggs. Let's not make it hard on our people. Why are we making it hard on people that we're trying to help in Iowa? In her closing statements, Hora said she understands the concerns about food access, but that the SNAP and WIC restrictions are related to labeling these products as related to eggs. Quote, I just want to say that I agree no child should have to not be able to eat something if they're allergic to eggs, she said. What we're saying is that they're not an egg. They're not fabricated, subquote, egg and subquote products. Call them something else. They're not eggs. That is what this bill is about. The bill goes back to the Senate for consideration of the amendment. You are listening to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch For April 5th, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's continue with this week's stories. Civil Rights and Immigration, Election 2024, Government and Politics. GOP, Trump, build on immigration fears to push voting restrictions in states. By Zachary Roth, April 3rd, 2024. With polls showing unauthorized immigration as Republicans' best issue for the fall, the GOP is looking to raise the alarm about voting by non-citizens and the undocumented. The multi-pronged effort has been advanced in congressional legislation, public statements by top election officials and U.S. senators, plans produced by grassroots activists, and posts on X by former President Donald Trump and others. Concern over illegal immigration and border security was Trump's central campaign issue when he won the presidency in 2016, and polls show it as the GOP's most potent political weapon again in 2024. A February 27th Gallup poll found 28% of respondents saw it as the country's most important issue, well ahead of any other topic. At an April 2nd rally in Michigan, Trump seized on the recent murder of a local woman, Ruby Garcia, who law enforcement has alleged was killed by her undocumented boyfriend. Quote, "We threw him out of the country, and crooked Joe Biden let him back in and let him stay, and he viciously killed Ruby," Trump said. But the party is also using the issue to bolster its ongoing push to stoke fear about voter fraud and press for more restrictive voting rules, and it has often trafficked in false and misleading claims about voting by undocumented immigrants. Voter fraud claims. Voting by non-citizens is extremely rare. That's because, voting advocates say, non-citizens are especially careful not to do anything that might jeopardize their status in the country. A voter fraud database run by the Conservative Heritage Foundation, which covers several decades in which billions of votes have been cast across the country, contains 29 entries that mention non-citizens. In some of these, a non-citizen registered but did not vote. Still, over the last few weeks, Republican secretaries of state from Georgia, Mississippi, and Alabama, and at least two U.S. Senate Republicans, were the latest to tout the issue. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger wrote in a March 12th op-ed that, quote, "leftist activist allies," end quote, of President Joe Biden, quote, "want to open the gate to non-citizen voting," end quote. At issue is a lawsuit challenging a Georgia measure requiring people to vote to show documentary proof of citizenship. The voting rights advocates behind the suit say the requirement isn't needed and can present a barrier to registration for some voters, especially naturalized citizens, who may not have easy access to citizenship documents. In the op-ed, Raffensperger, who famously resisted Trump's pressure to collude in subverting Georgia's 2020 election results, sought to conflate the issue of legal voting by the undocumented with burgeoning efforts by a few Democrat-led cities, including Washington, D.C., to allow legal non-citizens to vote in local elections. He has pushed for a constitutional amendment in Georgia that would bar local governments in the state from enfranchising non-citizens. Quote, "leftist activists have already shown that they want to change the laws that require voters to be U.S. citizens," Raffensperger wrote. "A constitutional amendment would eliminate any possibility for future efforts to change those laws." Warning on DOJ program. Days earlier, Mississippi Secretary of State Michael Watson sent a letter to the U.S. Justice Department warning that a federal program aimed at making voter registration easier for people in the custody of the U.S. Marshals Service and the Bureau of Prisons could lead to the registration not only of ineligible felons, but also of the undocumented. Quote, "due to the Biden administration's border policies, millions of illegal aliens have not only been allowed into this country during the last 3 years, but they have also been allowed to stay. Many of these aliens have been in the custody of an agency of the Department of Justice, including the Marshals," Watson wrote in a letter, which his office provided to State's newsroom. Quote, "providing ineligible non-citizens with information on how to register to vote undoubtedly encourages them to illegally register to vote," end quote. The Justice Department program is part of the Biden administration's response to the president's sweeping 2021 executive order aimed at using federal government agencies to expand access to voter registration. Republicans have condemned the order as an improper attempt to use public resources to advance partisan political goals. There is no evidence that the order has led to ineligible voters being added to the rolls. Alabama Secretary of State Wes Allen, as well as Senator Katie Britt, Republican Alabama, also sought to raise concerns about non-citizen voting in an exchange at a March 12th hearing of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee. The two Alabama Republicans charged that the federal government has denied election officials the tools they need to verify citizenship. Quote, "I think verifying citizenship is important now more than ever, especially given what's happening at the southern border," said Allen, who is testifying before the panel. At the same hearing, Senator Mike Lee, Republican Utah, used his time to ask the witnesses if they agreed that only U.S. citizens should be able to vote in federal elections, something that's already the law, and that people registering to vote should have to show proof of citizenship. Lee later sent out a clip of the exchange on X. Memo calls for proof of citizenship to register. Also last month, the conservative voting activist Cleta Mitchell, who played a key role in Trump's bid to overturn the 2020 election, circulated a memo on the, quote, "threat of non-citizen voting in 2024," end quote. The memo, posted online by a conservative advocacy group, called for a federal law requiring people to show proof of citizenship when registering, among other steps. Quote, "There are myriad left-wing advocacy groups who register illegals to vote," Mitchell wrote, a charge for which she did not provide evidence. But the party's efforts to tie together voting and immigration have been underway for longer in this election cycle. Last March, the state's newsroom reported a group of prominent conservative election activists came together to promote what they called a national campaign to, quote, "protect voting at all levels of government as the exclusive right of citizens," end quote. Months later, congressional Republicans unveiled a sweeping elections bill, which aimed to capture the GOP's top priorities in its push to tighten voting rules, and which contained a full section on stopping non-citizen voting. Among other steps, the measure would give states more access to federal data on citizenship and make it easier for them to remove people flagged as non-citizens from the rolls. It would also penalize states where non-citizens can vote in local elections by cutting their share of federal election funding. While Democrats control the Senate and the White House, the bill has little chance of becoming law. Legislation on non-citizen voting. Separately, in the current session of Congress alone, the House Administration Committee has passed seven different bills addressing non-citizen voting. Last year, the House voted to use Congress's authority over the District of Columbia to overturn D.C.'s law enfranchising non-citizens, the first time the House had voted to overturn a district bill since 2015. The Senate didn't take up the bill. One Republican lawmaker introduced a resolution calling for a constitutional amendment to ban non-citizen voting. Legal non-citizen voting has a long history in the U.S. In the middle of the 19th century, at least 16 states passed measures enfranchising non-citizens, often to lure workers to underpopulated western states. These laws were gradually repealed in the late 19th and early 20th century, a period when a more general anxiety about mass voting led to Jim Crow laws in the South and laws restricting voting by Catholic and Jewish immigrants in the North. Some prominent figures have falsely suggested that Democrats are now soft-pedaling border security so they can benefit from the votes of the undocumented. Quote, "That's why we are allowing these people to come in, people that don't speak our language. They are signing them up to vote," Trump said at a January rally in Iowa. "And I believe that's why you're having millions of people pour into our country, and it could very well affect the next election. That's why they are doing it," end quote. Elon Musk, the billionaire tech entrepreneur, has taken a similar view. Quote, "Dems won't deport because every illegal is a highly likely vote at some point," Musk told his over 170 million followers in a February 26 post on X, which he owns, commenting on news that an undocumented immigrant hadn't been deported despite a string of arrests. Quote, "That simple incentive explains what seems to be insane behavior," end quote. U.S. Senator J.D. Vance, Republican Ohio, charged in a 2022 TV ad, quote, Joe Biden's open border is killing Ohioans with more illegal drugs and more Democrat voters pouring into this country. Kansas law. One figure who may have done more than any to promote the threat to voting by non-citizens is Kansas Attorney General Chris Kobach. As the state's Secretary of State, Kobach pushed for a law requiring voter registrants to provide proof of citizenship. The law was ultimately struck down by a federal court, which found, quote, no credible evidence, end quote, that a significant number of non-citizens had registered to vote before it was implemented. The law was responsible for keeping tens of thousands of voter registration applications in limbo during an election. Kobach went on to chair a voter fraud commission created in 2017 by the Trump White House, which pushed for a federal law similar to the Kansas law. The panel disbanded the following year without providing evidence of widespread voter fraud. Government and politics. Healthcare. Postpartum Medicaid extension with cut in eligibility heads to governor's desk. By Robin Opsahl, April 3, 2024. The Iowa House approved a bill extending postpartum Medicaid coverage from 60 days to a year Wednesday, despite criticism from Democrats about increased income restrictions on eligible families. Senate File 2251 passed 70-25, extends postpartum Medicaid coverage for new mothers and infants through provisions made by a federal coronavirus pandemic emergency plan signed by President Joe Biden in 2021. While the federal plan funding would allow for a less restrictive income limit, the Iowa bill would limit eligibility for coverage to families with income at or below 215% of the federal poverty line. This limitation is a drop from the previous 375% FPL limit for postpartum coverage, a measure lawmakers estimated would cost the state roughly $6.2 million. House Democrats introduced an amendment Wednesday to reinstate the existing limit for coverage. Average FPL coverage among 47 states participating in the postpartum Medicaid expansion is at 210%, Senator Mark Costello, Republican, Imogene, said in a Friday subcommittee meeting. Representative Heather Mattson, Democrat, Ankeny, said Democrats and maternal health advocates were excited to see Iowa participating in the postpartum Medicaid expansion, as has been called for, but were shocked that it came with the, quote, major caveat, end quote, of reducing eligibility. Quote, I am not asking anyone in this chamber to increase the number of Iowans who are eligible for postpartum care, Mattson said. I'm asking you to ensure all the moms who are currently eligible for prenatal care and 2 months of postpartum will receive a full 12 months of postpartum care, end quote. With the new limit, 1,300 mothers and 400 babies each month who are currently eligible for coverage would no longer qualify for the program, according to the bill's fiscal note from the nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency. These families should remain eligible for the program, Mattson argued, and Iowa could use its sizable budget surplus to fund the coverage. With the proposed restriction, postpartum Medicaid coverage would be limited to mothers and infants in a family of four with a household income of $67,100 or less, and $43,900 for a single mother and infant, Representative Megan Cervinus, Democrat Des Moines, said. Cernivas, a physician, said prenatal health care and delivery can often cost uninsured patients up to $25,000, costs that could prevent a single mother making $44,000 annually from receiving needed health care during pregnancy. The bill's floor manager, Representative Devin Wood, Republican New Market, said it is important to note that families currently receiving postpartum Medicaid coverage who exceed the new income limit would be grandfathered in to the extended program and would not lose care. She also said that while she looked forward to continuing the conversation on maternal health care coverage, that it is time for the legislature to take, quote, make a movement on this, end quote, and extend coverage. Quote, I want to note that this bill, as is imperative for those moms that need it most, Wood said. It would still put us at 13th most generous in the nation, including, ellipses, our neighboring states. It would put us higher than South Dakota. It would put us higher than Nebraska. It would put us comparable with Illinois and would put us at just under Missouri and Minnesota, end quote. The amendment failed. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confer said that she wanted to be clear that House Democrats support expanding postpartum coverage, but that Democrats also believe Iowa is in a, quote, budget situation where we can afford to fund these moms, end quote. Quote, frankly, I resent the fact that we have to make this choice, Confer said. This is a policy choice that many other states have made. It's a policy choice that is clearly the right thing to do. But it's not enough just to expand it. We have to have something in there to make it budget neutral. And that's frustrating, because this isn't an expensive endeavor, and the cost is so high for not doing it. House votes to expand non-abortion pregnancy services. The House also passed Senate File 2252 in a 61-34 vote Wednesday, making changes to Iowa's More Options for Maternal Support, or MOMS, program. The legislation would give the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services direct oversight on the MOMS program and contracts with providers, following programs the department faced with finding a qualified applicant to serve as a third-party administrator as required by the original law. Mattson said the bill's changes to the program's oversight and difficulties in finding an administrator, quote, should reflect on the viability of the program that will send taxpayer dollars to crisis pregnancy centers, end quote. Democrats brought up their concerns with the overall MOMS program, which provides government funding to, quote, crisis pregnancy centers, end quote, that encourage alternatives to abortion for support services such as counseling, adoption services, parenthood classes, and material items like diapers or baby formula. Some former patients of pregnancy centers have said such programs misrepresent themselves as licensed medical providers. Quote, fundamentally, I do not believe we should be spending taxpayer dollars on unaccountable organizations with varying levels of ethical practices, Mattson said. Government funding should go to legitimate healthcare clinics. Misinformation endangers women, end quote. Representative Michael Bergen, Republican, Decorah, said concerns about the practices of pregnancy center staff funded through the MOMS program are covered by existing licensure systems, and HHS will monitor and enforce standards of care. Quote, we look at this as being one more opportunity to provide support and benefits to expectant mothers in Iowa, Bergen said. Both bills head to Governor Kim Reynolds for final approval. Election 2024, Government and Politics. Commentary. Blue Missouri leader tells rural Iowa Democrats, don't talk about Biden. By Douglas Burns, April 2nd, 2024. From the Iowa Writers Collaborative. Even with strong job growth, infrastructure development, including boost to ag regions, and other financial metrics trending positively, President Joe Biden is struggling to break through on the economy with voters. A fact former Presidents Obama and Clinton delved into last week at a record-breaking New York City fundraiser for the president's re-election. Instead of searching for, to this point, unobtainable messaging on the economy for Biden, a leader of a progressive Missouri organization has another answer for rural Democrats. Don't bring up Biden and focus on local candidates. I specifically don't talk about Biden because all he's doing is delivering roads and that sort of thing. But they need to talk about who's really impacting their life, and that's people in the Statehouse. Jess Piper, the executive director of Blue Missouri, and the host of the, quote, Dirt Road Democrat, end quote, podcast, said in an interview with the Iowa Mercury. How could Democrats cut through on the economy? Quote, you don't, Piper said. Piper, a Missouri farmer who lives near Maryville in the northwest corner of the Show Me State, close to the Iowa border, headlined the recent Progress Iowa 12th birthday party in Des Moines at the Tom and Ruth Harkin Institute on the Drake University campus. A former Missouri Statehouse candidate who challenged GOP headwinds herself in 2022, Piper came north with a message for Democrats in red regions of Iowa. Running for office is worth it, even if you lose, as it likely will take several elections for the party to climb back in wide swaths of the nation. I did come from Missouri, Piper said in her speech at the Progress Iowa celebration. I heard that Kim Reynolds had sent the troops down to the southern border, and I got through. Piper said she became energized in 2018 when Missouri passed an abortion ban with no exception for rape and incest after 6 months. quote, "I'd kind of been coasting through because Obama was president and everything was cool," she said. "And then I was jarred awake." In 2020, she voted for Biden. No Democrat was on the ballot in 2022 in her House district, so she ran herself. Quote, "That was a tough 2 years, and I got my butt kicked. I mean bad," Piper said. "But here's the thing. It's worth it." State Representative Jeff Farnan, a Missouri Republican in that state's House District 1, captured the race with 75% of the vote to Piper's 25%. "A Democrat hasn't been elected to the Missouri House from her region for 32 years, she said. Quote, "And you can tell because there's no shoulders on our roads," Piper said. "Because our schools are 4 days a week. Because they close our hospitals. Because they ban our books and they pay our teachers $33,000 a year to teach," end quote. Even when Democrats in conservative districts know they can't win, their candidacies make the Republicans spend money. Quote, "That person I ran against had to show up to forums," Piper said. "He had to face me. He had to knock doors. He had to make calls. He had to raise money. And he had to use it in the district. He couldn't take that money when there's nobody running and pocket it and head to Columbia or St. Louis or Kansas City, where they have blue places. He had to spend $100,000, end quote. Piper said she was aware of the challenge of flipping her district in one cycle, but people need to hear the Democrat message over and over, she said. Quote, "They understood I didn't have horns," Piper, a longtime teacher, said. "They understood that I was someone from their community, that I taught their son or their nephew or their granddaughter, and they remember that." When Democrats come back and knock doors in successive election cycles, maybe voters will reconsider in her statehouse district, Piper said. Quote, "I'm a patriotic person, but I also believe you ought to have access to health care," Piper, 48, said. She said the voucher/education savings account legislation that passed in Iowa is destroying public schools. Quote, "There is misinformation. They don't understand what is going on," Piper said. "Democrats can change that," Piper said. "Iowa Democrats can, quote, claw your way back, end quote, to power more quickly than in other states, like her native Missouri or Idaho," she said. In an interview after the speech, Piper said Democrats can't surrender on core principles like abortion rights in rural areas, where such positioning could potentially shake seats loose. In Pennsylvania, a Democrat in the Johnstown area, State Representative Frank Burns of Cambria, defies conventional political wisdom by holding a seat with an, quote, A, end quote, rating from the National Rifle Association and an anti-abortion voting record. Should Democrats embrace pro-life candidates again in rural areas? Elected officials who would be with Democrats on labor issues and other economic matters, but stray on culture issues like abortion? Quote, "I don't think so," Piper said. "Bodily autonomy is a right, and I think that we should draw a clear distinction. I think the time for pro-life Democrats has come and gone. Most of the progressives I know, even pretty conservative women that I know, are not going to vote for someone who has a pro-life stance at all," end quote. What's the draw in rural America to Donald Trump? Quote, "It's a team," Piper said. "It's a winning team. It's red versus blue. It's not politics anymore. It has nothing to do with economics. It has nothing to do with their schools, their farms, or anything else, because they're voting against their self-interest. I think it's just identity politics." Douglas Burns is a fourth-generation Iowa journalist whose family operated the Carroll Times-Herald for 93 years. He is the founder and director of development for the nonprofit Western Iowa Journalism Foundation. Additionally, Burns founded a marketing and advertising firm, Mercury Boost, which is based in Council Bluffs. He is the business development director for Latino IQ, an Iowa-based organization. Burns, who resides in Carroll, writes for a number of Iowa newspapers, with his work also having appeared in the Minneapolis Star Tribune and Kansas City Star. You can also subscribe to his blog, The Iowa Mercury, on Substack. And that does it for today's reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for April 5th, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gazier. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
In Africa, 5-year-old Charu has no choice. She and millions like her must walk miles every day for dirty water. But together, we can end their walk by providing clean water close by. Instead of spending hours walking to get water that makes them sick, girls can be in a classroom that expands their minds, and moms will gain back time to care for their families. Sons and daughters can grow up strong, finally free of sicknesses caused by dirty water. At World Vision, care about clean water runs deep. Deep enough to reach one new person with clean water every 10 seconds. Because every child, every person, everywhere deserves clean water and a chance to rise to their full potential. It's true. When you just add water, you change a life. Learn more at worldvision.org.